The parable of the Good Samaritan. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbour?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbour to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise."
About a month ago or so, I think it was, a wonderful teacher, Bible teacher, Liz Hoare from Wycliffe Hall in Oxford, led a wonderful retreat here for ministers and Christian workers. And one of the features of the retreat day up in the chapel, it was about a month ago, was to reflect, spend some time in meditation on some passages of Scripture. And one of the passages was this very passage in Luke chapter 10, the parable of the Good Samaritan. I was hosting the event. I'd invited Liz down. And if any of you have ever hosted events, you will know it's very difficult to actually enter into the day because you're so worried about, not worried, but you know, you're taking care of the day. Candy was, of course, doing her usual great stuff. So I was kind of preoccupied. But I decided, as best I could, to enter into these meditations and these exercises. I thought, well, why not? You know, this is for me also. So I spent some time, and lo and behold, God spoke to me. Isn't that amazing? God spoke to me. And although it's been a rule of mine over the years not to give away so quickly what God speaks to you, I have to confess I couldn't resist. Already I was thinking, now I'm going to use this word for Stewardship Sunday. So I've broken my vow because it really impacted me. And it was from this passage. And it wasn't the hypocrisy of the priest. It wasn't the indifference of the Levite. It wasn't really even the tenderness of the Good Samaritan, although I will come back to that in a minute, who saw this body lying in the street, in the road between Jerusalem and Jericho, half dead. All of that stuff, the priest, the Levite, the tenderness of the Samaritan man, was known to me. I knew that. I was familiar with it. And something that I've preached about many times. What struck me that morning in the reflections, and it really captured my imagination, was what happens next. That having led the man on his donkey down into, well, it must be Jericho. I was just there in January. you know, Jerusalem's up in the hills, Jericho's down in the Jordan Valley, and so he takes him down to this, like a dormer town for Jerusalem, brings him to an inn, and he takes care of him. He stays overnight because it says then, here's the bit, the next morning he took 2 silver coins, he gives them to the innkeeper, saying, look after him, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. And I couldn't stop thinking about these, looking at these 2 silver coins. And the words, as he's handing these coins over, the words, take care of him. And by the way, if it costs any more of that, I will pay. Now, I just saw those 2 coins as incredibly tender love for this man. And I guess the reason this hadn't struck me before, and maybe why I believe the Holy Spirit sort of introduced the thought to me in that reflection, was because for the most part, I don't know about you, I have tended to see money, so this is why I was thinking about Stewardship Sunday, as a kind of substitute for actual care. Do you know what I mean by that? No, from the silence. I mean, just maybe nod your head or no. Some of you are getting what I'm saying. You know, thank you. Almost as if money is a way that you subcontract your care to somebody else who's going to do the care. And sometimes that's exactly what happens. That's fine, because you don't. But And in fact, when I was a school teacher many, many, many years ago now, I mean over 30 years ago now, in Kingston, I can remember taking an assembly with my tutor group. I think they were year sevens. And I can remember it was during the time of Comic Relief, just as that was all getting going. I remember reenacting with my students, this parable to make exactly that point, that there's no substitute for real, actual care. So what I did, I can remember it now, I got one of the students to lie on the floor on the assembly in front of the whole school in a pool of blood. I mean, not actual blood, but, you know, pool of blood. And then the first person came on the stage, and they just did what the priest and the Levite did. They just kind of walked by. You know, they just walked by. And then another student came on, and because it was Comic Relief and all of that stuff, they had, I think it was a red nose. I couldn't find a red nose in the Millmead props department this morning, so I found some rabbit ears. So they walked by, and they saw the body, and this is the only time you're ever going to see me wearing rabbit ears in a pulpit. And then they did a little activity. They raised some money, and they gave it to the situation, and then they moved on, right? So that was my next student. Then another student came on, and they saw the body lying in the street. They got out a checkbook. Remember these things? Checkbooks? Got out a checkbook, and they wrote a check, and they gave it, not to the body, but they gave it to somebody, and then they walked on. And then, because this is the point I really wanted to make to everybody in the school, then somebody walked on the stage. I can see his face now, but I can't remember his name. And he saw the body lying on the road, and he got down, and he tended to the man's wounds, and he poured oil and wine, as it says in the story, and he gave him real care. Yeah? Real care, not money, checks, red noses, charity, but real care. And I think if you pushed me on this and pressed me on this, I think I probably would still say that. I still feel probably that there is no substitute ultimately for rolling your sleeves up and getting down there and really caring. And what's so beautiful about this story, and you've heard me preach on this before, some of you, is that when the man does get down, this Samaritan, of all people, from the mountain region, you know, fairly despised character, the way Luke describes it, as he gets down to the man and he starts pouring out oil and wine and binding the man's wounds, this is the language of worship. Luke wants you to know that worship is happening somewhere on a road between, on a street between Jerusalem and Jericho, in a dusty area with a half-dead man. This man is pouring out worship to him, to God, by attending to the man's needs. The priest and the Levite, they've come from Jerusalem. They've been pouring out oil and wine and libations in the temple. They've been offering worship, but Luke is saying worship is also happening here. And so when we give of ourselves sacrificially, with our bodies, with our hands, this is worship. This is mercy. What is it, Hosea chapter 6? I require mercy, not sacrifice. It's compassion and mercy. This is the heart of God. So all of that's true. But what I came to see, so I'm just going to share you my experience of that day. What I came to see at the retreat, and I'd never clocked this before. I'd never really got this before. Maybe you have. I had not seen this before, that the man's compassion didn't stop at the point where he bound the wounds of the broken body on the floor, but that he carries it all the way through to the end of the story. So how does he do that? By placing him on a donkey. I mean, I actually saw a man on a donkey going through Wadi Kelt back in January, which is on this very road, probably where this story was imagined. You place somebody on your donkey, he's assuming now the place of a servant, and his master is now on the donkey. And he walks him right down into Jericho, which is hostile territory. This is not comfortable for him. He stays the night with him in an inn. They're kind of notorious places. And then in the morning, as I say, he hands over these coins. And this is what caught me, these coins. I spent a half hour just thinking of these coins. They became for me like a sacrament of love. He hands them over to the innkeeper. And he says, he's beautiful, take care of him. Now, we don't know why he's disappeared, why he's gone, but he says, when I come back, I will pay more, but what you must do is look after him. And here's the money to care for him. In other words, the money that he gives to the innkeeper is not a substitute for his care, it's an extension of his care. Do you agree? It's a prolongation of his care. It's a continuation of his care. He's cared all the way from the point where he saw the man, and now in his giving, he probably gives the final act of love. And those coins become so beautiful and precious to God. The bandits, if you're interested in the way that Luke's the master storyteller. Well, Jesus, he's recounting Jesus' story. The bandits on the road, they rob him, they leave him dying, and they abandon him. This stranger, this foreigner, he pays for him. He leaves him taken care of, and he promises to return. And I will reimburse you for any other expense, because what he wants for this man is that he is fully healed. And you know healing takes time, so he wants that time for this man to convalesce, to use an old-fashioned word, a beautiful word, to truly heal, to be made well and then to return back to his community. How does he do that? Money does that. Money makes that happen in this context. And I don't know about you, I just think that's beautiful. So easy, isn't it, when a bag comes round, where there's a collection. Probably even more so with a standing order. It's so easy just to sort of, well, we just give it away. But how about imagining that what you do there is actually an act of love? Paul actually describes it to the Philippians, doesn't he? It just occurs to me now as a fragrant offering to God. It's a sweet smell to him. It's worship. Every bit as much as what he did on the ground in binding the wounds. And it's not that this is the only way of expressing stewardship. So here we are on Stewardship Sunday, and I'm looking at the time. Here we are on Stewardship Sunday. Money is not the only thing we talk about when we talk about how we steward the gifts that we have or the talents that we have. So we see stewardship in this passage, don't we, in three ways. Another three-point sermon. Can't believe I keep doing this. What's wrong with me? So you have the stewardship in the story of probably the most precious thing we have, actually, of anything. It is our time. Yeah? I mean, he didn't have to stop, did he? Think about it. This Samaritan didn't have to stop. It was an inconvenience to him, and it was dangerous. Who's to say this is not a trap? Yeah, hundreds of stories of that, where a decoy body is left in the ground, and suddenly you're the one now being attacked. It's inconvenient, it's risky, it's dangerous. He would have been well within his rights, which is a word we always use these days, to walk on by like the priest and the Levite. He would have been okay, for whom it really was inconvenient. It was inconvenient for the priest and the Levite because had they touched this body and had it turned out that he was dead, they would have had to have gone all the way back to Jerusalem. They'd have had to go all the way back into the temple. They'd have had to wash themselves. They'd have to purify themselves. Probably 3 or 4 days before they could go back to their family in Jericho. Hugely inconvenient. But this Samaritan, he overcame. Goodness knows what purifying rituals he would have had to have gone through. Because he also came from a religious community. He overcame that. And he gave him time. You may feel, I've never been able to give to this community the money that I would love to give. But what you've given is possibly more precious than that, even. You've given time. And this church thrives and grows on the gift that you give of time. And we've already heard this morning, haven't we? We need more volunteers for the toddler group. It's a fantastic, I mean, I pop in there, not just for the cakes, I would like you to know that, but I do manage to sort of time it coincidentally when the cakes are being dished around. And I look around, I thought, what a fantastic ministry. Always has been. And so we want people for that. We've been hearing this morning about the cafe, Open Grounds again. Well, most of you, I imagine, have been in the cafe now and think, wow, what a wonderful space. Oh, what a ministry and gift. So how does it work? Time that we give. So the stewardship of time is in this story. And then the stewardship of effort, which is the other thing that we can give, isn't it? Our actual effort. He got down, well, I imagine he got down on his knees. He I imagine if he had sleeves, he rolled them up. He probably tore his shirt to make a makeshift bandage. He found oil and wine that he was carrying in his panniers. He tended to the man's wounds. No health and safety. No liability forms. He just did it. And then, I mean, this takes effort. He hoisted this kind of, well, kind of dead weight. He hoisted it up onto the donkey, didn't he? So that takes effort. And if he never gave a penny from here on in, if the story had stopped there, that would have been a lot. No. Time, inconvenience, energy, effort. But as I say, and this is the message this morning, he gave him also, and this is what I had not really noticed until that Wednesday retreat. And I'm sitting there in the chapel, and I'm trying to enter into this story, and I'm thinking of other things. And then I read that passage, and I see those two coins, and the Lord has me absolutely focused. And those two coins, as we heard this morning, a bit like the two widows, the two little mites of the widow, they became something to me absolutely precious. I thank God for the generosity of this church. And I thank God for, as Lance said, for the people who can't, you know, I would love to be able to give thousands of millions. I can only give this much. But that much is your act of love and sacrifice to God. It means the world to him. As these two coins meant the world, something beautiful for God. I'd like that on my tombstone, you know. That's what I'd like to think about myself and this church. They did something beautiful for God. Whether it's successful or not, it doesn't really matter. It's offered as something beautiful for God. And it's a fragrant offering. Paul gives this collection, doesn't he? He takes this collection wherever he goes in the Mediterranean, churches that he planted for the poor in Jerusalem that were undergoing a famine. And he feels that there's a whole sermon there. He wants to send it back to Jerusalem because he feels a great indebtedness, as we should feel, a great indebtedness to the Jews for the gospel. So he's collecting this money around the churches, but he calls it not a collection, just he calls it an offering, a fragrant offering to God. Why? Because through your giving, you are healing the wounds of the world. You are blessing the world. And God is able to make all grace abound to you. It's not, you know, when we give, we're not losing anything. We're investing. We're sowing. And God, Paul says to the Corinthians, God is able to make all grace abound to you so that you, having all you need can be generous on every occasion, he says. And then he says, and you can abound in every good work, as it is written, and now he's quoting the psalm, they have freely scattered their gifts to the poor, their righteousness endures forever. Isn't it great to be such a church that you can just freely give away? Trusting, as Arthur said, that God will more than make up the difference, or whatever that gap is. That's how it works. At which point, and I'm going to bring this to a close now, I think we ought to do, one of these Sundays, what I saw they did at Red Hill Baptist Church a number of years ago. I was preaching there. And they, when they take the offering, part of the tradition of that church is that they place the offering on the communion table to underline precisely this point, that this collection has a function, to be sure, but it is actually worship. It's an offering to God. And they placed the bags there. Maybe we should have done that this morning, although I thought it was quite funny where Lance put the offering. How about this as a final thought? I'm done for this morning. As we come to the communion table, that the Good Samaritan, who appears in the story suddenly and unexpectedly, think about that. He's a rejected outsider. Binds up our wounds. And then as he takes the man into town, he gives himself in a costly demonstration of love. He pays for this man. He pays the price for him. Has it ever occurred to you, maybe the way Luke tells this story is to get you to think that actually this Good Samaritan is Jesus himself, who takes his care to the uttermost and pays for us, gives himself completely to us. We're going to sing a song before we come to communion that really is an expression of gratitude for the Jesus who comes to us in this way and calls us to live this way in sacrificial love and consecration to the Lord. As the worship band come and join me now, let me read to you from Hosea chapter 6. Again, there's another sermon there. Hosea chapter 6, astonishing. If you read the whole chapter, you've got the whole of the parable of the Good Samaritan throughout the chapter. I'm just going to give you the first few verses. Come, let us return to the Lord. He has torn us to pieces, but he will heal us. He has injured us, but he will bind up our wounds. Here's an Easter saying. Always surprises me. It never makes its way into the New Testament. After 2 days, he will revive us. On the third day, he will restore us, that we may live in his presence.